Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're talking about the Kingdom of God, and we're talking in a conversation with Moshe. That we're in the fourth session of our conversation with Moshe, which is a patriot constitutionalist who has a lot of ideas that are floating around out there that have been getting people into trouble for a long time now, and actually keeping them distracted from the truth and the true source of liberty in the world today, what really makes a nation great. And he is being tempted to follow the ways of unrighteousness, thinking that they are righteous. You know, a lot of people don't realize that many people will call evil good and good evil. They will think that the ways of Christ are evil. They'll think, wow, you're not out there voting, you're not out there fixing things, you're not out there making them do what's right. And the fact is the power really comes when you simply do what's right. You make that commitment to do what's right. One of the men in the last century that had a profound effect on millions upon millions of people was the tank guy at Tiananmen Square, who, you know, some people believe he's dead, some people believe that he was in prison for a while and then he got out and they don't know where he is. And of course, it was to his advantage not to be known where he was at, so he may have gotten away scot-free. We don't know. It doesn't really matter. The fact is he was inspiring, because he went out with his little shopping bag and stepped in front of a tank, and the tank tried to drive around him and he wouldn't go around him. Now, I personally think that there had to have been some particular spiritual power in this man to give him the strength to do this. I don't recommend try this at home. You need to have the full armor of God if you're going to face evil. I think it's 2 days, or no, it's 4 days away till a lady has to appear in court where she may lose all her children. And we have a couple articles that are going to be posted on preparing you and connecting you with other stories like this. I've seen it for dozens of years, where Children's Services, Marcola writes an article about, and quoting people that are in the know, in the business, that says that Children's Services makes money by terminating parental rights. For every child they terminate parental rights for, and it was a conservative who brought this about. I won't even mention his name. But he was running for president at one time. But, yeah, that's the thing, is that it's not always bad men. It's sometimes, although I don't necessarily think this guy is a good guy, but it's a lot of times it's good men with bad ideas. But I tell you, really good men don't have really bad ideas. Men who think they're good will have bad ideas all the time. And his idea was to allow children to be adopted by terminating parental rights. And he thought that was a good thing. And what it's done is it's put the children into the state's control. And while the child is in the state's control, they're given X amount of dollars, which often exceeds that which they need to take care of the kid. And it makes money for all the other agencies. It goes into the general fund. And they're doing the same thing with people. They've actually lobotomized numerous people that I personally know of, have been lobotomized by drugs. See, so there's no scar. You know, it's not like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest where you can see the scar on the side of his head. I've known people with those lobotomy scars on the side of their head where they simply went into the brain and cut part of it. And now this guy's real manageable. He just walks around in a daze all the time. Well, you can do the same thing with drugs and nobody sees the scar. They just say, well, there's something wrong with that guy. Yeah, how did that get it? Oh, I don't know. He just had some problems or strokes or something. You know, what he had was the drugs. And we may have some doctors on shows eventually, and we'll talk about some of these things. So anyway, in her topics with Moshe, we're covering a number of things, and I quote some of the things that he wrote so that you get an idea of some of these misconceptions. His following response reveals two things, at least. He is not following the logic presented, and he really wants to rule by power rather than right, and does not want to focus on the individual's lack of righteousness, but really wants to blame everything on government. Of course, there can be no rights without righteousness, and he hasn't quite made that connection. He's disconnected from that. He thinks that if you just talk righteous, it makes you righteous. Demand your rights. You don't demand your rights, you earn your rights. You can't have your rights unless you take back your responsibilities. And he's always talking about government having power to make our rights now available. All we need is this massive vote. But the reality is the massive vote is what is draining society. Because they're voting for people who will give and promise them benefits. They'll promise them liberty, but deliver them into bondage. And they are snared by their own efforts. Because what happens is those men they elect to these offices of power use that power to get more power. And they get more power by getting more money. And they get more money by feeding things to the military industrial complex, to the pork barrel projects in their local community, and they get kickbacks, you know, and the bureaucracy they create, you know, like the head of the testing of new products and for the Department of Health suddenly gets jobs with major pharmaceutical industries or with the producers of aspartame or with GMOs in the agricultural industry, and they flip back and forth, and you can read all those stories. It's completely out of control because you thought you can control your neighbor. You gave power to men to control your neighbor, and you found out that they were going to control you. That was their intention all the time. Because they're not men of service. They're men of power. I'm in public service, which means I'm a leech on the people. And the fact is children are being taken all the time as a matter of profit for the government. And I didn't invent that. I saw it. I realized it. But the reality is, like I said, the article of Marcolo's on his own website, he's pretty respected. And he's quoting who it is that is telling them this. And the fact is if you want to take the time and look it up, but if you want to sit back, you know, like we talked in our series on Justina, which you can also read it preparing you. Here we have the commentaries of people after reading a poorly written article by somebody else that didn't really get all their facts straight. They're saying, well, of course, there must be something else because they want to imagine the government wouldn't be doing anything bad like this. These are good people in these agencies, and they're trying to do right. The fact is, they're not that good. I mean, there are probably good... I know people who are in welfare systems. I mean, they're welfare workers. And they seem pretty decent. And there probably are decent people in there. Just like there are decent cops. But because they wear a badge doesn't make them decent. It's when they're decent. When they're honorable, that's what makes them honorable. The badge doesn't do it. And it's the same way with the job. There are pedophiles working in children's services. Yep. Registered pedophiles working in children's services. I mean, if you were a pedophile, wouldn't you want to have a job where you had total control over the life of children? Absolutely. That's what you're going to be looking for. And you'll know how to play the game and get into that position of power. Don't kid yourself. So anyway, Moshe says, you cannot say that the government does not have the power to restore the constitutional law or standards. He assumes that they're gone. They're not gone. They're still there. You just don't understand them. As the government controls the armies and has all the guns. Well, actually, the last I've seen, the largest standing army in the world is the Wisconsin Deer Hunters. They have a lot of guns. There's a lot of people there that have guns. They don't have tanks, and they don't have all these other things and nuclear bombs, but they got a lot of guns. And it's kind of an ant mentality that you think that they have all the guns. His whole position is felonious to begin with, because the Constitution is still there, guaranteeing the obligation of contract. and you've given away power by that contract. And as such, he says, can change the law any way it wants. That's not how law is established. That's how pirates are established. And I can give you a number of quotes on that. His comment shows that he doesn't really understand the law at all. A maxim of law. And if you want, I can give it to you in the Latin. Or I can give it to you in English. Ah, pirates, es et latronibus, capti, libere, permanent. What did I just say? Okay, this is the law of nations. Those captured by pirates and robbers remain free. Or how about this? Things captured by pirates and robbers do not change ownership. You see, just because you have the guns, you're not making law. You're just being a tyrant. You're just being a despot. And anybody could overthrow you and hang you for the thief you are. That isn't how governments are established, and I sense this from the beginning with Moshe, and he just doesn't seem to get that. He needs to repent of that. So I'm going to smack him up the side of the head with that, if he ever gets around to listening to these recordings. And that's what I was trying to say, and I say it to him in one of the last posts that I've made to him. But he says, and as long as it has the backing of the people, then the bankers and international debt holders can cry all they like, or go to war. That is how it has always been, forever. I see your point in that, he says. It would be best if the entire world changed their ways. Guess what? Newsflash. They're not gonna. I would think it would be great if they would, but chances are, even when half the world is dead from this debacle of tyranny in the hearts and minds of men, they give power to rulers. See, the rulers aren't the tyrants. It's your neighbor who's the tyrant. It's you who's the tyrant. Because you thought you could bind yourself in a community and you could control the purse so that you would benefit. And you found that the beast that you created is out of control, going about devouring who it will. That's the way it works. You created the beast. He said, I'd like to have free education. Oh, yeah, I'd like to have Social Security. Oh, I'd like to have disability. Oh, I'd like to have Medicare. And some of you said, oh, wait a minute, I don't want Medicare. No, I don't want universal health care. I don't want that. That's too much. But you already started the momentum down that road. You started going that way. You've gone too far. Don't cross that line. We crossed that line 100 years ago. And we've been getting farther and farther across it every year. And he talks about it would be great if the whole world changed its way so that all nations could change back to the proper standards of freedom and private property. Well, if there's private property, you can't tax me to have your free education. It's not private property if you can take away a portion of its value, take away all the land, if I don't pay for your child's education or your public cemeteries or whatever. It's private property when it's private. And then if we want a school, we get together and we say, let's build a school. And let's be efficient about it. I mean, school out here was built by private funds. As a matter of fact, I recently re-roofed it with private funds. It's just a historical landmark now. They don't go to school there. They ship the kids way off to get their brainwashing. But when it used to be a school, the school to the north of us, same county, next valley over, and the land it was built on was actually donated to build the school. I admit the school was built with public funds, but the land was donated to build the school on. So that spirit of donation is still here. We could still be doing this. We could do this overnight? No. But you can start by homeschooling and then gathering together in homeschool groups. And then don't get away from the principles of homeschooling by creating an institution, but as homeschooling groups, you can help fund the education and help with your time and energy, not always with money. There'll be single parents that need help raising their kids and homeschooling them. If you're in groups, you can bear those burdens together. That's a start. He goes on to say so that all nations could change back to a proper standard of freedom and private property. That's what I'm talking about. That's not what he's talking about. I offer a plan for this, an international solution, allowing the IMF and the World Bank to lead the charge to set all nations free. You think they're going to listen to him? No. I'll show you who led the charge. Jesus Christ led the charge. You know who was the World Bank at the time of Jesus Christ? The temple at Ephesus, built by over 127 different countries. Largest vault, most secure vault in all the Mediterranean. Why? Because it was the IMF of its day. And the apostle, like Peter, were accused of robbing it. Why? Did somebody think they broke into the vault? No, because they offered an alternative system where people were turning away from the one system, and which was this IMF banking debt system, and turning to this system of Christ. But only the righteous would go for the system of Christ, because it only works for the righteous. It doesn't work for the slothful. It doesn't work for the greedy. It doesn't work for the power hungry. The people who want to join your network and take over. It won't work for them. So how does it work? Well, it works different than he thinks. It works a lot different than he thinks. He talks about starting over without any debt. We'll get that chance. But unfortunately, a lot of people will be dead. We want you to be free and survive freedom by seeking real righteousness and not so much self-righteousness. He goes on to say the bankers could take credit for solving for all the world's debts and also ending poverty, and then they would be loved instead of hated. That's what he's talking about, is them forgiving debt. And that's actually one way they could do it. It's called proslimity in the law. But I've looked into the hearts and eyes of these people, and they're not going to forgive the debt. It's just not the way they work. I wouldn't count on that. Now, there may come a time where he said, Pharaoh says, the people are free to go. But then he'll try to destroy them, just like he did back then, just like the early Christians faced at their second exodus, which was Pentecost. So anyway, my reply to his statement was, actually, I said, second, the government cannot restore that what it no longer has. I also made it clear that you have lost your rights due to the covetousness and sloth, not because you have been robbed. But yet what he is contending is to rob, to just simply say, we're not paying the debt back, and if you don't like it, we'll shoot you or remove you. We're just not going to pay it. We're going to be pirates. We're going to take over the ship. We're mutineers. Jesus was the ultimate revolutionary, because he was involved with a revolutionary of righteousness. That's what we need to go back to, real righteousness. As long as people want to blame somebody else rather than take the responsibility for their own part in this boondoggle, they will not be free, nor will they get their property rights back. So in my response, I also talked to him about this idea of you can't, you know, a maxim of law that you cannot capture things like a pirate. You cannot go in there and just say, well, I'm taking this. It doesn't work that way. And it's not righteous. And if you do it that way, you will lose what you took. Eventually, you will lose what you took. And there are exceptions to that. And we could go into that historically. But the exceptions really aren't an exception. It's because of extenuating circumstances. I mean, like, we came here and won our freedom long before the American Revolution. In the Declaration of Independence, we talk about unwarranted usurpations. And I show in the book Covenants of the Gods, I quote the articles of the time and people, the lawyers of the time, which aren't lawyers like we see today, but the men who studied law at the time, saying that we have already won our freedom. But there's an usurper, the king. The king was the revolutionist. He was the one who was revolting against the law. But unfortunately, people don't understand that in the nature our history, because they somehow think that people were fighting the American Revolution for the Constitution, which hadn't even been written yet. Most of the people objected to the Constitution. If it had been put to a vote of the people, for the people, and by the people, they would have voted it down. Historians all agree on that. That's not in question, even, because it was so unpopular. But it really didn't have anything to do with them. It had to do with the people of the United States. They were citizens of individual states. They weren't citizens of the United States. They were citizens of the individual states that were united. But that's changed. Things change. And you need to follow the history of that change to figure out where you're at. You're trying to navigate back to some imagined point in time where you were free. You don't even know how you got to where you are. You lost your bearings. You got to get oriented on the map. Now, Moshe's not oriented on the map. He's confused about what the Constitution is, where freedom came from, where rights came from, how we lost them. He thinks the Constitution is gone. It's not. It's morphed. And your relationship with it has morphed. And I warn him that it's a false hope to imagine that America has the will to win such a conflict. They did not have the will to stop the bailout. They didn't have the will to stop all the other things that we see going on. Because the people of America are mostly selfish. I mean, there are some great people in America who are not. But they're often lacking knowledge. And the ones that are not selfish don't understand what God really wants of them. To be free. What is required to be free. People under God instead of under other men who think they're gods. It might be best if the entire world changed, he said. But you need a better and more practical plan than what he's coming up with, which is to get all these candidates out there, which actually is just the reverse of what you need to do. You don't need all those candidates. If you could even get one voted, you don't want to split the vote. You need a plan where only 10% have to change and make a real difference. That's the kind of plan you need. And that's what Christ came up with. And that's what Moses came up with. I also don't think that the IMF could solve any of the problems. It is usually the cause of the problems, and not without a strategy of its own. When we talked about in Acts 19, we see ministers of Christ being accused of robbing that temple at Ephesus, which we've already talked about, and that it could seat over 24,000 people. The buildings, some of these buildings actually look like our modern day treasuries. And people don't understand how that works. They don't understand these things. They're so ignorant of them. The reference to temples as banks is not uncommon in history. The temples in Egypt acted much like banks, issuing script coming from in forms of usurious money, making loans, collecting interest. They did all this in the temples. Even the temples of Rome were more like investment banks, although there were several different ones, and each one operated a little bit different, but all of them had vaults in them to provide for the welfare of the people in one way or another, or, you know, like your stock exchange is like the temples. Maybe not the stock exchange. Stock exchange has even gone worse, way far away from it. But it used to be that if somebody was going to have a big trading expedition or mining expedition, you could actually go to one of these temples and buy into that expedition, where you put up some money invested in that expedition. They went up and mined gold, or they moved commodities across the ocean, and then you got a percentage of the profit when they got back. So it was a way to make money if you had extra money to invest other than what you needed. You could actually make your money grow and accomplish these great things. They were making boats bigger than Noah's Ark and plying the ocean with them. And the reason they were able to do this is cooperatives. And that's what some of these temples were. They had private cooperatives and they had temple-run cooperatives. But the temples were not run by the state at that time. It actually financed military expeditions sometimes. But anyway, that's another whole story. But one of the things that Ephesus did was it helped provide for social insurance throughout the Corban of, you know, the systems of Corban throughout the Roman Empire, which was the world to them, the constitutional order and system of government of Rome that helped provide for the needy with free bread and circuses, which was, almost all historians will agree that that led to the downfall of Rome, is the free bread and circuses, which is the social welfare and this government-financed entertainment. Yeah, they're tearing down a big stadium in Minnesota and putting up one that's going to cost over $1 billion or something. And a lot of the expense of that is going to be on the taxpayers. Why not? It's just the Colosseum. That's all it is. It's you're following history. So who survived the decline and fall of the Roman Empire and actually thrived during that? Christians. Why? Because of what they were doing. What were they doing? Not what you're doing in your churches. So anyway, I wrote an article called To Heal Our Land, and you can find that, links to that. It's in the sermon section. And there's also links to articles on Corbin, so you can read more about that. But we'll go on to titular or lawmaker section of this Moses. We'll be right back to Keys to the Kingdom after this brief break.
Things seem to be going wrong in the world today. Every aspect of our lives seems to be under attack sometimes. Many struggle to make sense out of it. What is really going on? Identifying the problem is critical to any solution. Many people claim to have answers. But what is the truth? What works? What has worked in the past? History does repeat itself, and you must learn from it. You have choices. We cannot change the course of history, but we may change our role in it. All roads lead to Rome. All roads lead to the kingdom of God. The question is, which way are you going? Join us to make sense out of it all for an iconoclastic look at the world yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and hear about the keys of the kingdom.
I'm Brother Justice, and I'm a minister of His Holy Church of Sacramento, California. His Holy Church is a powerful weapon in the hands of God. The books, The Covenants of the Gods, and Thy Kingdom Come has changed the course of my life forever. For those of you who are truly looking for the way, I encourage you to look to His Holy Church at www.hisholychurch.org. May the good Lord bless you and keep you.
Hi, I'm Brent. I'm a contact minister for the Living Network in Northeast Missouri. You're not the only one out there with the desire to learn the truth. There are people all over the world coming together in faith, hope, and charity. Join us at one of the upcoming gatherings to meet new people, fellowship, work, and play. Whether it's the Fall Burning Bush Festival in Oregon or the Spring Gathering in Northeast Missouri, you'll get all the details when you join the Living Network. Go to hisholychurch.org and click on the network link. Find out what you've been missing. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're talking about the difference between a titular leader and a lawmaker. Because Moshe, in this series, and we're in series 4, said, we elect representative government to represent us. Well, then you're not a democracy. Because a democracy elects lawmakers. An indirect democracy does. In a pure democracy, you're actually the majority makes the law. And the representatives just, you know, kind of make up bills, and then they'll bring them back to the people, and the people vote on them. And probably one of the most direct democracies today of any size is Switzerland. And they go around, and everybody in Switzerland votes on every law. Now, that may have changed, but that's the way it used to be. And that's the way that direct democracy works. But an indirect democracy is all the people vote. They elect a bunch of congressmen and senators or parliamentarians, and they go and make the laws based on the majority of their vote. They will even elect the president by an electoral college. That's the way Rome was. Did anybody ever wonder how Rome got its emperors? Rome had no real central leader for a long time. Then they had proconsuls and tribunes and and all these things. But eventually they got their first Caesar, which was Octavius, who was known as Augustus, the Savior, Caesar, the Emperor, which is Imperator, meaning Commander-in-Chief. That was a 10-year term of office, and he was elected by the Senate to that office. He also was elected Principas Civitas, which was the president of Rome, a municipality. That was part of his office. He didn't win that election. That was a year, 1-year term, and he would have to be elected each year. And a lot of times he didn't run. Usually had one of his cronies operating there because he was away. He was, you know, they didn't have cell phones, and so he's off out of the country. And so somebody else would run and be elected by the Senate. But the third office he asked for was the Apotheos of Rome, which was, it means, if you translate, and this is interesting about the Romans, I mean, that's actually Greek, and it means appointer of gods. So he asked for that office, and he was granted that by the Senate, by the Electoral College of the Senate. But what did that office include? Did he go around and build statues to gods? The gods had a purpose. They were symbols of authority, and it was part of their court system. The gods he appointed were the imperial judges throughout the empire. He would appoint them to decide imperial matters in all the different countries that were under their protection, or part of their Pax Romana. And that's what he was doing. He was appointing what we would call today federal judges. And they didn't have a lot of power at first, but as the empire grew, they were deciding more and more matters on a regular basis because there was this imperial jurisdiction expanding. And one of the ways they expanded that is free bread and circuses and benefits, you know, roads and all this stuff. And they were expanding their jurisdiction by offering those things. And with that expanded jurisdiction, there was more taxes. And the people were more under their control. And this control was reaching out into Judea, who had invited Romans in to settle a civil war. So anyway, understanding that little bit about government, we hear what Moshe says, is we elect a representative government to represent us so that we, the people, need not revolt or rise up or have blood in the streets. That is the point of a representative government, so that if our government should be corrupted, we can replace it. And the amendment process allows us to change anything. Well, actually, it doesn't allow you to change anything, but not the debate here. The repeal and repeal anything of previous body of government has been stupid enough to do. That is how constitutional republic works, or is supposed to work, so the claim that it cannot restore what it is no longer has is false. No, it isn't. Now, again, remember I said that it can't give back what it doesn't have anymore. If it's gone into debt, it can't cancel that debt through legislation. It still owes it. But he wants to be a pirate and just say, we're not going to pay, come and get us, kind of thing. Well, thanks a lot. I don't want any part of that. I'll just read on with what he says. He says, I cannot restore anything that we demand it to restore. He says it can restore anything that we demand it restore. Well, it can't. If it doesn't have it, it can't restore it. I can't give you what I don't have. It's only lawful for me to do with what is my own. If they've sold it, it doesn't belong to them anymore. This guy's a pirate, I tell you. He wants to just restore it with a gun. We're just going to take it back. You know, that's... Don't give that man a gun. And those who stand in the way are then identified as the enemy to our freedom. No, enemy to your robbery. You know, I there was a sociopath guy who... Show you how this works. We're going to stray a little bit here. There was a guy who was accused of murdering somebody. And he'd been in a car. He'd been hitchhiking. He'd been in a car, and a cop got murdered. And he was accused of doing it and went to jail for it. And he always said, I didn't do it. I wasn't there. I don't know what you're talking about. Didn't have anything to do with this. And a private investigator got wind of all this and listened to his story and started researching. I think he was actually a writer who was researching it originally, but then he began to follow it up because he thought there was some inconsistencies here. And he decided that this guy didn't do it, that another guy that was involved that night driving the car, that he had done it, and this hitchhiker had nothing to do with the event. And he began to research it and track it down and track down this other guy and find that this guy was involved with a number of shady deals in the Army. And what the guy was actually eventually caught, and he came and was interviewing the guy, and he had gotten caught in a number of things and had broke into a hotel room and beat a man unconscious with his pistol and kidnapped his wife and was going out the door and getting in the truck. And the guy that he had beat unconscious woke up, picked up the pistol and came out to save his wife, picked up a pistol or got his pistol or something, came out, and he was going to try to shoot the guy, and the guy killed him. And in the course of conversations with this guy who killed the guy, the investigator was saying, says, well, now what happened there? And he says, well, I had to shoot the guy. He was trying to kill me. He says, but you had robbed him and beat him, and you were kidnapping his wife. He says, yeah, but that doesn't matter. I mean, he was trying to kill me. I had to kill him. He says, but don't you realize he was just trying to save his wife? No, no, this guy was trying to kill me. I had to kill him. And no matter what you did, I can't even do the conversation like this guy did. He says, no matter what you could do, he could not see the guy had any justification in stopping him from kidnapping the wife. He was completely oblivious to the fact that he was robbing, that he was beating a man almost to death, that he was kidnapping his wife. All he could see was that this guy was crazy. He was trying to kill me, like he had done nothing. Could not connect that he had done wrong. He can't see that. Total cognitive disconnect. Total sociopath. Okay, where did that come from? Well, you have to piece the pieces together. When that guy was a small boy, him and his brother were playing in the backyard, and his brother died. His brother drowned in the pool. His brother was a little bit younger than him. I think he was like 5, and his brother was like 3 or something like that. And there was a lot of trying to figure out what happened and all this stuff. And of course, this was many years before. But it's very possible he was jealous of his brother, and his brother either fell in or he pushed his brother in, and he did not help his brother get out. And he saw his brother drowning, and he just did nothing. And it created guilt in him that he could never deal with, could never face. And every time you deny the truth, now this is the secret of the kingdom. Every time you deny the truth, you bind yourself to the lie. And you create a shadow in your consciousness. You know, when they do studies on cognitive disconnect, they actually put people under MRIs and they look at the activity of the brain and they see that there's something going on in the brain during these periods of cognitive dissonance or disconnect. And what it is you've got dark spots in your brain, shadows in your brain, places in your brain where you don't go and perceive the truth. You don't see the truth about something, usually about yourself, usually to do with guilt, feeling guilty. You're angry at somebody. You hate somebody. You feel guilty about it. You don't want to be forgiving, and you put that in a dark place in your mind. And in that dark place in your mind, things happen. It's like the mansions of your being. Demonic forces get in there. We'll just put it in those terms. You can draw what picture you want. But influences, angry, hateful, argumentative, resentful influences dwell in you and influence you from time to time, sometimes all the time. And when you need understanding to put pieces of the puzzle together, you can't get them because they're in that dark place. And so now you start doing things compulsively. You start having compulsive fear. Fear of spiders. Fear of snakes. Fear of being outside. Fear of this. Fear of that. Fear of raising your hand. Of questioning authority. But you can also have where you can absolutely do the most horrendous things and have no conscience about it whatsoever. Because you fear even looking in there. It's like you don't even know who's making those choices. You look at these Jeffrey Dahmers. Who's making the choices to do these things? Some of the other compulsive serial killers. They know they're serial killers. They even have remorse after they've done something. But they go back and do it again. They're compelled to go back. They're not in control. There's another spirit dwelling in them that's in control. You can think of it as a devil or a demon or whatever. But the reality is we create our own demons. We create the habitat for our own demons by our denial of the truth. And the truth is that if you were really electing a representative government and not trying to be a lawmaker for your neighbor and oppress your neighbor and control your neighbor and make your neighbor do what you think is right, and you were just electing people to help carry out what you believe is to be righteous, but only in a righteous way. Nah, there is no property rights if you can, through your amendment process, take from this guy or take from that guy or take from the rich or take from the middle class. Any kind of government that can just force the cancellation of debt by the use of a gun is a thief and a robber. And they will not stop there. They will say, well, we need a highway here. We're going to take money from all these people near the highway and force them to build this highway. You're a tyrant. You're a despot. You don't believe in property rights. You believe in power and control. A republic. You go look up the definition in the older dictionaries. Moshe goes on to talk about things like the republic and representative governments, and we have some links there on that page that will shed some light on what a republic really is. He goes on to insinuate that I'm saying nothing can be done. Things can be done, but he has this disconnect where he thinks that if you don't agree with what he wants to have done, then you mean nothing can be done. I'm telling you what can be done. And it must be done righteously, or you will become the very tyrant that you claim you are throwing off, like the fellow in Dr. Zhivago. He says, so say it is not possible, or say that it's not possible are people who must be thrown down and removed as they work for the bankers by telling the people there is nothing we can do, which of course is not what we're saying. Nothing you can do about what they have done, but you can do all kinds of things about what you are doing. And he says, which sadly seems you are doing. Are you doing that, or will you stand with the people to restore a proper government, to restore our freedom? I don't know that you should be free, because you're talking about throwing down, you're talking about canceling debt with a force of arms, not paying what you owe. You sound very violent and very pirate kind of guy, which I don't approve of at all. And again, back to what a republic is, and you can go to our articles on a republic and see that a republic is titular. This is very important to understand, that a republic is a titular form of government. I mean, the leaders of a republic are titular, because the power of the state is with the people. It's not with the government. But he wants the power to be in the government, then he wants to control the government, just like he said he was going to control our network. He was going to join it, now I'm going to take it over. Well, there's too many independent people. They're not going to let him take it over. I'm sorry, it's not going to work. But anyway, maybe we should look up a definition of a republic so that we have a little bit of knowledge that we need to have to understand what a republic really is. I mean, there was Throughout history, rulers and court intellectuals have aspired to use the educational system to shape their nation. The model was set out by Plato in the Republic, which is Plato's Republic. This is one of the big mistakes people don't understand. Plato's Republic was not a real republic. It was a fake republic. And he talks about how they are going to deceive people. But anyway, I'm quoting a particular individual here who the model was set by Plato in the Republic and was constructed most faithfully in the Soviet Russia, fascist Italy, and Nazi Germany. One can see how irresistible a vehicle of schools would be to any such social engineering. They represent a unique opportunity to mold the future citizens early in life, to instill in them the proper reverence for the ruling culture, and prepare them to be obedient and obeisant taxpayers and soldiers. Now, that's a guy who wrote a great deal about public education and private education, Sheldon Richman, who wrote the book Separating Schools and State, because he understood, he could see the repercussions of not doing that. And he was could see the problem. But the fact is, when the state was the people, when the status of the people was free, education was in the hands of the state. But the state was in the hands of the people. We seem to think that the word state is always synonymous with a central form of government. And that's not the case in American history. It's not the case in world history. The majority of world history shows that most governments were voluntary systems of government without an authoritarian ruling class. There's a rich history of such successful governments. You just simply won't read about them in public school. There are some academia that are now writing about it, having discovered it, and Enterprise of Law is one book that will talk about it. There's a lot of other books coming on. Of course, our books talk about it all the time and show you an example, like in the book Thy Kingdom Comes, how a government operates without a central authority. So anyway, the individual colonies were republics, and they even sent troops over from Great Britain to defend the American Republic long before the American Revolution. So what is this republic? And here's another maxim of law. The civil law reduces the unwilling freedman to his original slavery, but the law of the Anglos judge once manumitted as ever after free. So what are they talking about? The United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government. That's not the same as saying that the United States is a republic. The United States is a democracy within a republic, and that's what the Congress has ruled in the American Creed. You didn't know the United States had a creed. Well, of course, it has a creed and it has a religious program. Welfare is a religious enterprise. Because religion used to be, time of the Constitution, way back at the time of Christ, religion was how you took care of the needy of your society. And pure religion was to do this unspotted by the constitutional orders and systems of governments of the world. Here's the definition of a republic. Republic, a commonwealth that form a government in which the administration of affairs is open to all the citizens, the actual administration, not the election of a representative, but open to all the citizens. In another sense, it signifies the state independently of its government. Wait a minute, I thought the state was the government. The state is independently of its government? So the government is over here, but the state is over here. Well, what's the state? The state is the people. People in a state of freedom are the state. And their government is simply representatives of them, but not rulers over them. So that definition was Republic in Black's Third Dictionary, page 1536. So that's not some bizarre definition, but you just don't understand the significance of a state independent of the government. That's because the state is still in the hands of the people in a pure republic. You can't find too many of them. Did you know that the Christian church, by historians, one of the most famous historians at the time of the American Revolution, who wrote The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, referred to Christianity as a viable republic in the heart of the Roman Empire? Did you know that the churches in America, as opposed to the churches in Europe, were referred to as embryonic republics? What do they mean, embryonic republics? I tell you, there's a lot missing from your public school education. In Webster's Dictionary, we have almost 20 different definitions for words like the state. A state is a status, or an estate, or a condition of life, which is, in the case of a republic, can be independent of its government. So there you have a government that is actually titular. And another place we find the word republic defined as a state or nation in which the supreme power rests in all the citizens, not collectively, but individually. That's where you still have dominion, because you haven't despised it yet. And so therefore you still hold dominion, you're sovereign, and you're independent of the government. You know anybody who's independent of the government today? Then they might have been 100 years ago in America, or 150 years ago in America. But I don't know anybody independent of the government today. But that's what a republic is. It goes on in that definition to say a state or nation with a president as its titular head there. Now you see the word president, you say, oh, well, we got a president. But is the president titular? Distinguished from a monarch. Okay, in this definition we see again that the supreme power is in the hands of the citizen, who is entitled to vote, but he's only voting for representatives. He can't vote and take away the rights of his neighbor. And he can't elect men who have the right to take away the rights of his neighbor. Representatives are in charge of administrating the affairs of government. They're just administrating the affairs of government. They aren't lawmakers. In the second part of the definition, it states that the singular executive is titular. Titular is defined as existing in title or name only. Only. Nominal. While a monarch is a single or sole ruler of a state, a person or a thing that suppresses others of the same kind. Well, today we see presidents suppressing others by executive order. Even in one executive order of Bill Clinton, he talks about himself being the supreme authority to deal with morality, even, which is a scary thought. The term republic comes from the word res publica, they say, signifies the state independently of its form of government. Well, the word res publica actually comes from libera res publica, is the original Latin idiom, which means free from things public, because the individual is the state, independent of the government. The government is not the state, the people are the state. But they're not a democracy where they're a collective state. So anyway, that gives us a little bit of an idea of what Moshe doesn't understand. But I don't blame Moshe, because he went to public school, but he has to get over this idea that he gets to rule over everybody and control everybody and be this oppressor of anybody, to get them out of the way and throw them down if they don't do it the way he wants to do it. He imagines that somehow or other he's going to get all these people to elect saints to be the rulers of the people. It's not going to happen. It just doesn't work that way. So anyway, we'll have to talk more about this and maybe some of the stages of grief. We've already done a show on that. But we will talk more about that when we return to Keys of the Kingdom.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.